We are just now a couple of days away from Purim, two or three depending on the count. And as always, plenty to say, and my approach certainly to Purim is the greater our orientation, the more meaningful will be the disorientation. Interestingly, and of course, Purim this week is competing with Parshas Kisisa, which is as epic as the Parshas get. And what can we do? Mevatlin Talmud Torah for Purim. And yet, the first item that I'd like to discuss actually relates to Parshas Kisisa. It's very interesting because we perhaps don't notice that in a normal year, that is to say, if it's not a leap year, Purim falls in the week of Kisisa, generally. Tetzav will be Zachor, and then Purim will be in the week of Kisisa. And this is something which is discussed by Rav Hyman Zatzal, Rav Leib Hyman of the Groshul, and by Pagan in his Sefer Chikrei Leiv. And this, of course, as soon as he mentions it, it's blindingly obvious. But if Purim always falls at the week of Kisisa, then clearly there's some connection. And indeed, there is more than one point of connection. There are a number. And he begins, and of course, mitzvah gereres mitzvah, once you begin to see it, so then other connections also present themselves. Firstly, one of the primary protagonists, the heroes of the Purim story, that is to say Mordechai, is sourced in this week's parsha. In Parshas Kisisa, the Gemara famously in the end of Maseches Chulin, Daf Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, is looking to find the source for the three of the primary characters in the Megillah, Esther min haTorah minayin, Haster Aster, Haman min haTorah minayin, Hamin haEitz. And what about Mordechai? So Mordechai is somewhat more involved in the sense that the source of the Gemara is Parshas Kisisa, which discusses, amongst other things, the Shemin HaMishcha, the special oil that was used to anoint the Mishkan and its Kelim and Aaron and his sons. And among the ingredients for the Shemin HaMishcha is something called Mar Doror. Mar Doror, well, Mar Doror is not yet Mordechai. However, says the Gemara, if you look in Targum Onkelos, which you should do, especially if the Gemara tells you to, you will see that Onkelos translates the word Mar Doror as Meredachya. And the Gemara says, herein lies Mordechai in the Shemin HaMishcha. What has Mordechai got to do with the Shemin HaMishcha? That is a discussion all unto itself. But what we do see is of the primary personalities of the Megillah, Mordechai among them is sourced in Parshas Kisisa. Additionally, the Gemara tells us that there is a connection between the mitzvah of Machtes HaShekel and the story of Purim. As we know, the collection begins on Rosh Chodesh Adar, Be'echad Ba'adar, Mashmin al HaShkalim. That's how Maseches Shkalim begins. Now, halachically, the timing of Rosh Chodesh Adar is really more connected to Nisan. Just on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you bring new korbanos, and things being what they are, it takes a month until the new money gets to the Beis HaMikdash. So time a month backwards from Rosh Chodesh Nisan takes you to Rosh Chodesh Adar. So it doesn't sound like the Shkalim are anything to do with Adar itself. However, the Gemara in Megillah tells us that there is a connection between the Machtes HaShekel and the Purim story. Because, as we know, Haman not only suggested to destroy the Jewish people, to exterminate them, he offered to pay for it, or at least to reimburse Achashverosh for any loss suffered. Ba'aseres halafim ki karkesev eshkol. He will pay out those 10,000 talents of silver. And the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu preempted or preceded his payment with our payment. Our Machtes HaShekel is somehow the antidote and the prevention and the recovery for the money that Haman wanted to pay out. How exactly is the Machtes HaShekel the antidote to Aseres Alefim Ki Karkesef Eshkol? That's a discussion which we've had on other occasions. Haman is capitalizing on the disunity amongst the Jewish people. Mefuzer or Mefurad, Machtas HaShekel is a mitzvah which emphasizes and embodies the concept of unity. Everyone is a half, everyone's involved. The mitzvah of Machtas HaShekel is sourced in the beginning of Parshas Kisisa. That's how it begins. V'nosnu ish, Machtas HaShekel. And that is another major association and connection between the story of Purim and Parshas Kisisa. And to get to the story itself, it's interesting to note, what is the story of Purim? It is essentially the story of the Jewish people who were facing a threat of annihilation, which through tshuva was averted. And that is really the crux of the miracle. The very first time the Jewish people faced a threat of national annihilation was in Parshas Kisisa, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Herif mimeni vashideim, hanichali, more correctly, hanichali, v'yicharpi api v'achaleim, that the Jewish people were to be destroyed, and it's only through the efforts of Moshe Rabbeinu and then galvanizing the Jewish people to reverse the decree, and that itself is a precursor for the story of Purim, where we likewise faced a decree of extermination, and from a certain point of view, it was sanctioned from on high. It was a response to certain things, to certain wrongdoings, national wrongdoings. And indeed, says Rav Hyman, in both cases, it began with Avodah Zarah. The Chet HaEgel in this week's Parsha, of course, is all about Avodah Zarah, primarily about Avodah Zarah. And as the Gemara famously states, again in Maseches Megillah, Rav Shimon ben Yochai implicates the fact that in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, the Jewish people en masse bow down to that statue that he set up, and that was the beginning of their difficulties and the beginning of the danger that they placed themselves in. So both times, the primary cause is that an issue of Avodah Zarah, which leads to a gezeira of chas v'chalila, extermination. And the truth is, there's a further point, I believe. Because as we know, the twin cause for the decree at the time of Purim, not only was it out over the Avodah Zarah all those years ago with Nebuchadnezzar, but it was famously as well because shenehenu misudoso shel Achashverosh, that they went to Achashverosh's Suda, and that was also considered to be a terrible thing. Except, if we ask carefully, of course, what is so terrible about the going to Achashverosh's Suda? Was the food kosher? Was it not kosher? Even if it's not kosher, I mean, not kosher food doesn't mean extermination. It means trouble, but not such severe. But the point, as the Meforshim explain, is to go to a Seuda. It's not just a question of what you eat. When you go to a Seuda, it's a statement of where you celebrate and how you feel about where you are. In other words, for the Jewish people to go to this feast and moreover, Nehenu Misudasa Shel Achashverosh, to enjoy it and to feel at home there, they'd almost established an identity for themselves which was antithetical to and having abandoned their actual roots. That's what was so reprehensible about going to the Suda. The reason why I mention this is because there is a phrase in the Parsha which I think we perhaps overlook because there's so much more dramatic things going on. But the Pasuk says that when the Bnei Yisrael made the Egel, or whoever it was made the Egel, it says, Vayeshev ha'am le'echol v'shaso. The nation, they sat down to eat and to drink, v'yakum le'tzachek. And I wonder whether, in keeping with the theme of Rav Hyman, that in a sense the Chet HaEgel is the precursor for the story of Purim, we have both elements in the Egel as well. There is the Avodah Zarah element, the Egel itself, but also, not only did they were involved in Avodah Zarah, but they marked it with a feast, Nehenu Misudaso, and that also then is a precursor for those two things in the time of Purim. It is interesting, just to end on a positive note, that there is another theme which is detected by Rav Hyman, and that is the concept of Makdim Refua Lamaka. Hashem prepares the cure before the blow, before the ailment. And where do we see this in the story of Purim? And the Gemara itself mentions it. Hashem Akdim Refuah L'Makat, that's where it appears in the Shas. Because Haman was not allowed to rise to power until Esther was already in place for the salvation to occur. And that's why Perek Gimel begins, which is the first mention of Haman, Achar Dvarma Eile, after these words, except there is no immediately identifiable connection between the promotion of Haman and anything that happened before. It's just, and then Haman got promoted. After what? Says the Gemara, after Esther was queen and established, so when the time came and the Jewish people made the move to recovery, everything was in place for them. The refuah was in place before the Makkah. And what is the meaning? Is it just, shall we say, for our convenience that the refuah is there? The meaning of Hashem being Makdim Refuah L'Makkah, placing the cure before the ailment, is an indication as to what the ailment is there for. The ailment is never there. The goal of the ailment is never that it be fulfilled. It is only always that it should be removed. As if to say, a successful implementation of any difficulty for the Jewish people is that it should bring them to recovery, but not that those difficulties should actually stay with them. How is that indicated? How is that communicated? Whatever comes first sets the tone. The refuah comes first, because the refuah is the goal. But sometimes you need a makkah in order to access the refuah, as was the case with the Jewish people. And thus we find this principle in the story of Purim. Hashem is makdim refuah l'makkah. And so too, says Rav Hyman, if you look in the Perush of Rabbeinu Bachya, you will see something most interesting. Parshas Kisisa deals with the Chet HaEgel, as we know. Beforehand, you have the mitzvahs of, or the parshas of the Mishkan, Truma and Tetzaveh, the mitzvahs of the Mishkan. It will be followed by Vayakalem Pekudei, the implementation of the Mishkan and Bigdei Kohuna. But the mitzvah is mentioned before, even though, says Rabbeinu Bachya, according to many Mefarshim, the Mishkan itself is something of a response to the Chet HaEgel. That's certainly Rashi's position. It's called Mishkan HaEdus, the Mishkan of Testimony. Testimony that what? That Hashem forgave the Jewish people for the Egel. Now, if it is a response to the Egel, certainly in the way that it was built, so then why is it mentioned before the Egel? That's a fair question. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, because Hashem is Makdim Refuah L'Makkah. The Refuah here is the Mishkan. The Makkah is the Chet HaEgel. And once again, we see the very first implementation of this idea of Makdim Refuah L'Makkah is in Parshas Kisisa, the week where the story of Purim always falls. So these are very interesting and thought-provoking, and I do not believe that Rav Hyman meant to close the discussion there, perhaps only to open the discussion. Tein lechacham v'yechkam od, it gives one a new insight, a new way in which to view Parshas Kisisa. That's assumed that he's fully capable of viewing it by the time Leinian comes around on Shabbos morning. Now, moving into Inyanei Purim themselves, I wanted to discuss a very interesting feature. Perhaps we take it for granted, but there's a great deal to say. And that is the timing of the reading of the Megillah. As we know, we read the Megillah twice over Purim, once at night and once a day. Where does the Megillah itself talk about the reading of the Megillah? It's not mentioned as explicitly as the other mitzvahs. Mishte, Mishloach Manos, Matanis Lev Yonim, or black on white in the Pasuk, explicit. The Torah doesn't say reading the Megillah. Pardon me, the Megillah doesn't say reading the Megillah. But it says the words, Hayamim Ha'ele Nizkarim V'Nasim. These days are remembered, mentioned, and performed. Nizkarim, says the Gemara, refers to reading the Megillah, and as we know, it's one of the major mitzvahs of the day. Okay, now, all mitzvahs of Purim, as a rule, are only done by day. Mishloach Manos, by day. Matanos Yevyonim, by day. Su'uda needs to start in the day. For some, the bulk of the Su'uda needs to be in the day. For others, at least it should start in the day. Some Bechlal have their Su'uda in the morning. The Shalach Kodesh says the ideal is to have the Su'uda in the morning. But at any event, the Su'uda cannot take place at night. And so too the reading of the Megillah. But we also read the Megillah at night. That means the mitzvah of Megillah is exceptional to the mitzvahs of Purim. It's not the norm. It's an exception to the norm. And this is discussed by the Gemara in Megillah in the name of Rabbi Shua ben Levi. On Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. Vam Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Chayev Adam Likrosus HaMegillah Balayla V'lishnosa Bayom. A person should read the Megillah at night and then read it a second time by day. What? Why? Where does this come from? Shene Emar, he quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim. Not even from Megillas Esther. Tehillim. Now it's Tehillim Perek Kafbeis, which is Lamnatzech al Ayelas HaShachar, which is a chapter that is associated with Esther very, very closely. In fact, for those who have the minhag of the Vilna Gaon, that every special day has its own Shir Shalyom, the Shir Shalyom for Purim is Tehillim Kafbeis, Ayelas HaShachar. It's not going to be the Shir for a Thursday or Friday or whatever. And the Pasuk there says, Elokai ekra yomam velotane, velaila velodum yali. So it refers to the Jewish people calling out to Hashem by day and by night. And the point is, they called out by day and by night, so we read the Megillah by day and by night. What's the connection between our reading the Megillah and their calling out to Hashem? When they called out to Hashem, they weren't reading the Megillah, they were davening to be saved. But as Rashi explains, we're remembering the miracle that came about through the tefillah of Bnei Yisrael. That's very interesting. That means that by reading the Megillah at night and a day, we're marking the fact that the miracle came about through the tefillah of Bnei Yisrael. Indeed, as we've mentioned on other occasions, according to the Rambam, this is the primary theme of Purim. It's the primary message of Purim, that Hashem always responds to tefillah. If the Jewish people call out to him, he'll respond, Kashem Elokeinu b'chol kareinu eilav. So that's what's embedded within the reading of the Megillah at night. Interestingly, Tosfos say that as much as we read the Megillah at night and a day, but the Ikar reading is by day. Interesting. Which kind of makes sense, because the mitzvahs of Purim really are done by day, as much as there's another mitzvah to read the Megillah at night, but the Ikar mitzvah is done by day. Tosfos say that there's more persumei nisa during the day. Well, one may ponder that might depend, as if to say, in many places, perhaps more people come to shul in the night than in the day. In the night, that's when Purim begins. In the morning, it's already the morning, perhaps, but in any case. And this has halachic implications, because it's very interesting to note that when we read the Megillah at night, we make the bracha of Mikra Megillah, Shasa Nisim, and Shechianu. Why Shechianu? It's the first time we're performing a mitzvah. Megillah. Very nice. Next morning, when we read the Megillah, we make the brachas of Megillah, Shasa Nisim, and Shechianu. Again. Now the question is, why are we making Shechianu a second time? And Tosfos are quite firm on the fact that it's primarily over the reading of the Megillah. Again. It's true, one should have the other mitzvahs of the day in mind, quite true, but if there would be no Megillah, you wouldn't make a Shechianu on anything else. I mean, it does accrue to the pertain to the Megillah, but why are you making another Shechianu in the morning? I mean, what has happened between last night and this morning that you're making Shechianu again? But it says so, it's because this is the Ikar mitzvah. It's an amazing situation. This is the minhag of Ashkenaz. Interestingly, the minhag of Sfarad, based on the Rambam, is they do not make Shechianu in the morning. You made Shechianu at night, and you're good to go. So it's the first time you did the mitzvah, and that's that. But for Tosfos, it's almost like another mitzvah in the morning. Very interesting. And indeed, there are certain of the great Acharonim who take this idea even one step further. When we compare the night reading to the day reading, not only is the day reading primary, it's perhaps a different level of mitzvah altogether. What does that mean? Two of the great Acharonim, they are the Shagas Aryeh in his Sefer Turi Evin and the Nodeb Yehuda. Both say the same thing. The mitzvahs of Purim are in an interesting category. They're obviously not d'oraisa because they happened after the Torah had been given. But what would we call them? they're also not purely derabbanan. Why not? Because they occur and are referred to by the Navi in Nevi'im and Ksuvim. And there is an almost like an in-between category, so to speak, between D'oraisa and pure D'rabbanan, which is Divrei Nevi'im and Ksuvim, known as Divrei Kabbalah. And according to many authorities, actually, the level of stringency, or the level of tokef, that is to say, of potency, of a mitzvah, which is Midivrei Kabbalah, from Nevi'im and Ksuvim, is greater than that of a quote-unquote regular mitzvah D'rabbanan. There are those who say, if with the classic idea that when in doubt, you go l'chumra for a Torah mitzvah, l'kula sometimes for drabanan, but not if it's from the Nevi'im. For Nevi'im, you also go l'chumra. And that's why, famously, cities which are not sure when they read the Megillah, when to read the Megillah, 14th or 15th, they're not sure if they're the walled cities, etc., they read it twice, not just once. Where does that come from? Because it's Safek Divrei Nevi'im, l'chumra. Not the kula. Aha. And that is the status of the mitzvahs of Purim. Divrei Nevi'im. However, say the Noda Bihuda and the Shagas Aryeh, that is only true for the reading of the Megillah by day. All the mitzvahs of Purim happen by day. Yemei Mishta V'Simcha. And therefore, Mishloach Manos, the Suda, Matanes Lev Yonim, and the reading of the Megillah by day are called Divrei Nevi'im. But the reading of the Megillah at night is not Divrei Nevi'im. According to these authorities, reading the Megillah at night is not sourced back to the Megillah itself. It doesn't come from those words, Nizkarim V'Na'asim. You see that it's drawn from a different pasuk, and perhaps that pasuk isn't even a full drasha, but rather the night reading is a derabbanan pure in that way. So that's very interesting, because it turns out that that the night reading and the day reading are of different levels. The night reading is derabbanan, and the day reading is Divrei Kabbalah, Divrei Nevi'im. And indeed, this expresses itself in the halacha, that the day reading is the ikar, in the following very simple way. The Gemara has an interesting discussion as to, for as we know, in the unwalled cities, Purim is on the 14th, which will be this Thursday. For the walled cities, which practically for us in Yerushalayim, it will be on the 15th, Friday. Okay, what if a person lives in one place, but he finds himself somewhere else on Purim, which is not really his day? Well, the halacha is, if you're there for the day, then it's Purim for you. You can have Purim twice. If you live in Yerushalayim, but you leave and you're there on Thursday, you have Purim on Thursday, 100%. You come back home, you have Purim again. Ironically, the only place you can have 2 days Purim is in Yerushalayim, or between Yerushalayim and outside. But the critical question is, in terms of determining your status, where will you be when daybreak happens? Where will you be when the day begins, when the sun rises? If you will be in the other location when the sun rises on that day, then you're fixed and you're part of that place for that day. But if you are there in the evening but will come back before daybreak, nothing. Which means if you live in Yerushalayim and you're visiting outside of Yerushalayim on Wednesday night, but just for the night, and you'll be back before Thursday morning, you don't have no obligation to read the Megillah. Every other person there is fully obligated to read the Megillah, and not you, because it all goes after the morning. But why? If the day has started and you're there now, so why is the anchor the morning and not like everything else, when the day begins, vayere vayevoker, in the evening? Except the point is, we see that the ikar here is where you are in terms of the primary mitzvah, the original mitzvahs of Purim. And there are no mitzvahs of Purim dating back to the Megillah, which start at night. They're all in the day, because the night mitzvah is derabbanan. And therefore, your status is configured purely based on where will you be when the morning begins. That's halacha. Having said that, and after something of a build-up, I think, it makes it all the more interesting to note that two of the more recent poskim discuss an interesting shaila. They are the Aruch HaShulchan and Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach. What if a person will only be able to make it to one of the readings? It can happen, for whatever reason, either Pikuach Nefesh or the Balkuri is only available for one of them, and however it works. But Tachlis, a person is in a situation where he will have to choose the evening or the morning. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, and this is echoed by Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, choose the evening. Now that's very interesting, because Achar HaDvarim Ha'ele, after we've just established that the morning is of a much higher level, that's Divrei Nevi'im, the evening is Derabbanan only, so to speak. But this is the higher level of Divrei Nevi'im. Why would you choose to fulfill the more lenient mitzvah, shall we say, relatively, and not the more stringent mitzvah in the morning? The answer, very simply, says the Aruch HaShulchan and Reb Shlomo Zalman, Ein mavir na la mitzvahs. You don't forgo an opportunity to perform a mitzvah. It doesn't matter what the mitzvah is. If it's the evening and it's now and you have the possibility of fulfilling a mitzvah derabbanan, do not forgo that just because if you wait till morning, you'll then be able to perform a mitzvah of a higher level. You don't make cheshbonus like that. If you have the mitzvah now, that's the mitzvah you perform. And if it means that it really will be true that you won't be able to do the mitzvah tomorrow, so be it. You need to do the mitzvah that comes to you. This is sourced in a famous response of the Radvaz. Someone was imprisoned by the authorities, and they asked the Radvaz, they were given one day free. Okay, so now the question is, what day is it going to be? And they began to think, what should it be? They set out all the possibilities. Should maybe Purim, presumably Nisa, maybe Yom Kippur, they can keep Yom Kippur properly. The Radvaz says the day to choose is tomorrow, even if it's just Tuesday. Because don't wait. You have the opportunity to do a mitzvah now, you do a mitzvah now. And that becomes a yesod. There's other details and further angles, but that's the... So with all our understanding of the tiers of the mitzvah, that's the psak of Reb Shlomo Zalman and the Aruch HaShulchan. Now, with regards to, and continuing on this theme, there's another dimension here to the nighttime and the daytime. And it comes out from the Rambam. The Rambam in the Hilchas Megillah V'Chanukah, Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel. Incidentally, the Rambam, as sometimes happens, twins sets of halachas together. In this instance, he twins the mit halachas of Chanukah and Purim. It is interesting that as he names them, he calls them Hilchas Megillah V'Chanukah, which is an interesting combination, because Megillah is an object and Chanukah is a time. He doesn't call them Hilchus Purim B'Chanukah, and he doesn't call them Hilchus Megillah U'Menorah. He calls them Hilchus Object and Time. That's a question that we customarily raise at the Purim Suda. I have yet to hear actually an answer that would lead me not to ask the question again. But in any event, in Hilchus Megillah and Chanukah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Gimel, Rambam says, Mitzvah Likros Eskula. It's a mitzvah to read the entire Megillah. You may know from the Mishnayos, that's a dispute, but we pass in the Halacha, from Vayhi b'Mei HaChashveirosh until the very end. You can't miss a word. Mitzvah likros is kula. U'mitzvah likrosa balayla uvayom. And it's a mitzvah to read it at night and in day. Those are the two rulings of Rambam. Now, interestingly, we know them both to be true. And they're both the halacha. There doesn't seem to be much room for investigation here or inquiry. And yet, Rav Soloveitchik asks an interesting shaila, and it's a classic Soloveitchik question. Namely, why are these two halachas together? As if to say, they're both about the Megillah, but they're not the same. One is about the amount of the Megillah that you need to read, and the other is how many times do you need to read it, or when do you need to read it. Those are two separate things. It's the equivalent of in shofar, how many sounds do you need and when's the timing of the mitzvah? Amount for the mitzvah and timing of the mitzvah are two separate things. But the Rambam has put them together. But how are they connected? That you need to read all of it and that you need to read it twice in the night and in the day. Well, says Rav Soloveitchik, and the roots here are actually in the Sfasemes, in his Chidushim on Maseches Megillah. If you go back to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's words, which are Chayev Adam Likros Es HaMegillah Balayla V'Lishnosa Bayom, a person is obligated to read the Megillah at night and then to go and then to review it in the day. That's very interesting. There's many mitzvahs that apply by night and day. We don't look at the day mitzvah as reviewing the night mitzvah. You need to say Shema in the evening and the morning. The morning is not a review of the evening Shema. It's its own thing. And so it is with many other things. And yet, when it comes to the two readings of Megillah, we say that you read it at night and then review it in the day. Why is the day referred to as a reviewing of the nighttime reading? That's a good shaila. And the truth of the matter is, while we're asking, why does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi tell us that you have to read during the day at all? I don't need Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi for that. I know that from the Megillah. I know that from the Mishnah. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi comes after the Mishnah. His chiddush is you need to read it at night as well. So say to read it at night. But I don't need him to tell me that you need to read it a second time a day. That I knew by myself. But the point is, the mitzvah, if we begin, why is it a mitzvah to read the entire Megillah? It's an interesting shaila. What are we suggesting? What's the alternative? Well, how much of it is the essential story? It's a good question. If you look, for example, at the way we tell the story in Al-Anisim, we start from chapter 3. Right? Bimei Mordechai ve'Esther, Bikesh Haman Lashmid LaRogel Abed, which is basically chapter 3. We do not say, Bimei Mordechai ve'Esther, Achashverosh made a party, and the Vashti didn't come, and then Esther had then there was this beauty contest, and Esther won, and Big Tomah Teresh Tatikil. We don't say any of that. So is it part of the story, or is it not? And if it isn't, why aren't you Yotze if you didn't start from the very beginning? But the point is, it is part of the story, and it changes the entire story. If we do not start the Megillah from the very beginning, you almost miss the entire point in terms of reading. So Al-Nisim is like a summary almost. Why? Because the miracle of Purim is just how everyone acted. Everyone was in the right place at the right time. Esther was the queen. Mordechai is on location. And then they all act in complete synchronization. But that's not enough. Because if we don't realize how they came to be in the right place at the right time, then we haven't really gotten the story. As if to say what it took, the orchestrations to get Esther to be queen. Who was queen before her? What happened to her? How did Esther take her place? What's Mordechai doing there? And all of that, that's the full sweep of events comes with the whole story. And if you don't tell the whole story from the beginning, then you don't appreciate the story, and that's not correct. Well, what that means is, the thing about the Purim story is, you only really appreciate the beginning when you get to the end. As true as it is, and maybe appropriately for Purim, you could say this backwards and forwards, it's also true that you only appreciate the end when you've seen the beginning, but you certainly only appreciate the beginning when you get to the end. And what that means is all of the events in the earlier chapters, and it's difficult to know why they're significant and why it's... But when it all works out in the end, then you appreciate the beginning. And now, if you would read the story again, knowing, you almost like begin with the end in sight, as they say. In other words, you begin with the end in mind. You know how it ends. And with that vision, you go back and look again at the events of the beginning. It's a different reading. It's a different story now. And really, the chiddush, halachically, the chiddush of reading the Megillah at night in a day, when we say that the Ikkar reading is at day, it is. But when you read it at night, it changes the nature, it changes the quality, it elevates the quality of the daytime reading, because it's no longer reading, it's reviewing. And now that you're reviewing, and you've seen how the story ended, your understanding of all of the stages is immeasurably enhanced. And that's what's behind the mitzvah to read at night, and then to review it by day. It turns out, therefore, a couple of things. Firstly, we do understand now for Rambam that the mitzvah of reading the Megillah at day begins the night before. It's the same mitzvah in the sense that the nighttime reading is preparation for the day. In that respect, you're already beginning the process of elevating the daytime reading. We can certainly therefore understand why, according to the Rambam, when you make Shechiyanu at night, you don't make Shechiyanu again in the morning, because this isn't a new mitzvah. It's a continuation of the mitzvah that you began last night. They're a continuum. And secondly, we can understand why the Rambam put his two halachas together. Namely, there's a mitzvah to read the whole thing, and there is a mitzvah to read it in the night and in the day. They seem to be completely different aspects of Megillah. One's the amount, and one's the timing. How are they connected? Because they're both serving the same idea, full appreciation of every stage of the story. That's why you need to read the whole thing. That's why you need to start from the beginning. And it is also why you read it at night and then read it again at the day. Both of them are aimed at exactly the same idea, that when the time you read it in the day, you appreciate every stage of the story on a much higher level. So that's a very interesting approach to understanding how the nighttime reading and the daytime reading, they're a team, they're a continuum. And it makes it all the greater a chiddush now if we would still say, which I believe we do, that if you have to choose, you'll choose the nighttime. Once you see that the nighttime is quote unquote in principle preparation for the morning, so why would you choose the nighttime if it means that you won't be able to actually read the Megillah in the morning? And still we say, that may be what it's about, but tachlis, it's a mitzvah, and ein ma'avirin ala mitzvahs. You don't forgo the opportunity to do a mitzvah. Even though, but in this instance, by not forgoing the opportunity to read at night, if all things being equal, you may end up not being able to read at day. That's not our concern. One final point with regards to the night and the daytime reading. We quoted the opinion of Rabbi Shua ben Levi. You read at night and a day. And what's the source? That pasuk in Tehillim, Kaf Beis, Yomam Ekra v'lotaneli, v'lalayla v'lodumyali, and that's that. Interestingly, the Gemara quotes someone else who says you've got to read the Megillah twice. And not surprisingly, brings a different source. And that is Ula, who says, Chayev Adam Likras Samegillah Balaila Vilishnosa Bayom. Okay, which we knew, I think. Shine Emar, as it says, from another pasuk in Tehillim, with which I believe we're familiar. Lemani Zamecha Chavod Velo Yudo. Hashem Elokai Leola Modeka. Now that pasuk somehow, if we translate it, that we praise Hashem always, we won't be silent. That gives us somehow a Megillah reading at night and in the day. The question is, how do you get from that pasuk to reading the Megillah? It doesn't seem to have anything to do with the Megillah even once, let alone twice. And moreover, what is this second verse coming to add to the first? I mean, the first already established that on whatever level we have it, you to read the Megillah at night and at day, and then someone says the same thing and brings a different pasuk. Is there any difference between them, aside from just looking up a different pasuk? So Bezalel Zolti, Tzatzal, the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, says there actually is a difference between these two sources. And they reflect actually two different understandings of what the Megillah is doing. What is the Megillah doing? Well, as far as we're concerned, it's to tell the story. Pirsumei Nisa, that's the basic idea. But it's possible that the Megillah is doing something else. The Gemara, later on in Megillah, Daf Yud Daled, raises an interesting shaila. Why is it that we don't say Hallel on Purim? After all, it seems to have everything that you need. It's got a miracle, and it seems to relate to the entire Jewish people. It sounds like you should say Hallel. But we don't. But why not? And there are a number of explanations, and some approaches in the Gemara explain why Hallel is nevertheless not appropriate. But along comes Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman says, We do say Hallel on Purim through reading the Megillah. Kriyasa Zohalela. Through reading the Megillah, it's like saying Hallel. It's not your typical Hallel, that's for sure. And the choir is not allowed to join in. That's also true. But it's almost like a hidden Hallel, as Rav Futner explains. It's a hidden Hallel for a hidden miracle. But it's very interesting because according to Rav Nachman, there's Hallel in the Megillah. Whereas according to the other approaches, Hallel is not appropriate for Purim, either because it wasn't a full redemption, we were still subject to Achashverosh, it wasn't like the complete Me'avdus L'Cheiros like we had in Yetzias Mitzrayim. Says Rav Zolti, these two approaches to what the Megillah is are what are behind the two sources for reading the Megillah at night and by day. The first source, which it's about, perhaps remembering the tefillahs of Bnei Yisrael, the pasuk from Ayelah Sashachar, Yomam Ekra, and Laila Velodum Yali. But what Ullah came to add is that he quotes the pasuk Leman Yizamercha. Yizamercha is to sing. Leman Yizamecha Kavod, to sing to Hashem. What's it got to do with the Megillah? Because Ullah concurs with Rav Nachman that the Megillah is Hallel. And therefore it is a Zimra. When we say Hallel, we're talking not only to the congregation and telling them the story, but we're praising Hashem. It's Hallel. But Hallel only applies by day. Hallel as a mitzvah is only by day. That's the rule. Seder night is the exception. But as a rule, Chanukah and Yom Tov, Hallel is only by day. And that's why we have Lemani Zamercha Chavod refers to the day. Because in the daytime reading of Megillah, you have Zimra, you have that Hallel. In the evening, it's not Hallel. That's very interesting. It's another difference between the evening reading and the morning reading. The evening reading is just, quote unquote, the reading. It's just the Megillah. The morning is Megillah plus Hallel. And therefore, Leman Yizamercha Chavod is the daytime, because the Zimra there, this Hallel. Velo Yidom, and I won't be silent, means I'll be reading, even though it won't be Hallel. That's how Rav Zolti explains that. So those two sources reflect two understandings of what the Megillah is doing. And perhaps we may add. The Rambam actually concurs with Rav Nachman. He codifies Rav Nachman that the reading of the Megillah is the Hallel. And perhaps, therefore, we understand why it is that you need to read the Megillah at night and then at day. Because if you don't know the story already, it's not Hallel for you to read it. If you don't know what will happen and you're just reading, and we have to assume that the Megillah, first and foremost, is for a person who's never read it, and for every year, from a certain point of view, we're reading it again, for the first time. So when you read the Megillah for the first time, where's the Hallel in Achashverosh's party? Where's the Hallel in Esther becoming queen? Where's the Hallel in Bigdan and Teresh trying to kill Achashverosh? That doesn't sound very Hallel worthy. And you don't know. But if you don't know, how is it Hallel? So what's the answer? You have to know. It means you have to know already. For your daytime reading of the Megillah to be Hallel, you have to have read the night before. So you've seen the story through to the end, and now when you're reading it again, it's a different type of reading. It's every chapter is geshmak, because you know now. You know what will happen, and now you see it happen again. And that's what allows the daytime reading to be Hallel. And therefore, the Velo Yidom, not being silent in the night, is what allows for Leman Yizamercha, for the reading to take on the form of Hallel in the day. So these are some observations with regards to the day and the nighttime reading, and it's seemingly that's all there is to say, except for one final thing. We come back to this pasuk from Leman Yizamecha Chavod V'lo Yudom. All of a sudden, it's enlisted in the Gemara. It's about reading the Megillah at night and day. And what does it have to do with reading the Megillah at all? Forget about night and day. I mean, how does it relate to our situation? And this question is discussed most beautifully by the Ksav Sofer in the Drushas. He refers us to a most startling comment in the Gemara, again in Megillah and Daf Yud Daled. The Gemara comments on the point in the Megillah where Achashverosh takes his ring off and gives it to Haman and empowers him to destroy the Jewish people. And at that point, it couldn't get any worse. And the Gemara says, that act was greater or had a greater effect on the Jewish people than all the prophets and prophetesses in their history combined. That's a very optimistic way of looking at it. In the words of the Gemara, Gedola Hasaras HaTabas, the removal of the ring from Ahasuerus to Haman was greater than Memches Nevi'im and Shiva Nevi'os. How do we figure? Says the Gemara, well, look, all the Nevi'im told the Jewish people to do tshuva, and the Jewish people says, I will, or maybe later, or don't, or not now, or I did it at the office, or whatever. And nothing happened. Along came Haman, tried to destroy them, and Haman was single-handedly responsible for the greatest act of tshuva on the part of the Jewish people in history, which is rather unusual. And obviously the moral of the story is not credit to Haman. Haman is not Zahur Latov, but a fact is a fact. The Jewish people were galvanized towards tshuva by Haman more than all of the other Nevi'im combined. That's very interesting. But really, it is pushing us, that idea, to a very challenging notion. And that is that the threat of annihilation was not the greatest or the worst case scenario for the Jewish people. The worst case scenario for the Jewish people was not the threat of annihilation, it was the threat of disintegration. In other words, and we don't like to talk about it, we certainly don't glorify it, but it's part of the story, that the Jewish people were in a state of near collapse in terms of their Jewish observance and in terms of their Jewish identity. And we come back to what it means to go to Achashverosh's feast. It's just like forging a new way to succeed and to get ahead in life. The worst thing that could have happened to the Jewish people is that Haman had never happened. Because they basically would have done his work by themselves. They would simply have dissolved as a people. Now, of course, we don't want Haman's plan to succeed, but the threat of Haman's plan reawakened the Jewish people. And this means that we need to reframe what we consider to be the bad news and the good news in a very profound way. Namely, our standard vision of the story is the bad news is Haman tried to kill us. The good news is he wasn't able to, and that's it. But a much broader and more profound understanding is the bad news is we were in danger of disintegrating. And the good news is Hashem did not allow that to happen, because Haman entered the scene, reawakened us, and he, of course, got his comeuppance, and we're back in play. And we're back on the scene. That's the bad news and the good news. But really what that means is that on a certain level, we don't have to say thank you to Haman. But we do have to say thank you to Hashem for sending us Haman. What a thing to say. But that's really an amplification of the concept that whenever something happens that we consider to be bad news or difficulty, Chayev Adam levarech al hara, kishem shem levarech al hatova. Because you never know what good comes, even from harsh times. You never know. But if we say everything is for the best, then even harsh times are for the best. Says the Ksav Sofer, this is the meaning of reading the Megillah at night and at day. What is the difference in atmosphere? What's the difference in connotation between night and day? The day always symbolizes the time of redemption, when all is well. And the night symbolizes a time when all is not well. For us, the last thing we would have expected is to read the Megillah at night, because that doesn't work, that doesn't go. I mean, the night is the difficult times. But we're reading the Megillah over the good times. No, not only. In other words, the full message of what the Gemara is saying here is you've got to read the Megillah at night and day, because you have to read the Megillah and appreciate the night aspects of the Megillah as well as the day aspects of the Megillah. And that's why the Pasuk says, Lemani zamecha chavod velo yidom. That means that we praise Hashem velo yidom, and we're not silent at a time that you'd expect us to be silent, which is at the night. But we're not silent at night. Why not? Because as the Pasuk concludes, Hashem Elokai le'olam odeka. Hashem, Yudke Vavke, represents Midas Harachamim, mercy. Elokim is Midas Hadin. Hashem Elokai le'olam odeka means whether Hashem is relating to us with Midas Harachamim or with Midas Hadin, le'olam odeka. But Rachamim and Din translate into day and night. And that's the meaning of reading the Megillah at day and at night. There's an altogether different orientation towards the nighttime reading. It's a very profound idea. And there is a further point. We reference the halacha, as we know. A person needs to somehow give a bracha over bad news in the same way that he gives a bracha over good news. Chayav adam levarach al ra, kishem shem levarach al hatova. Why? It must be, it's a statement of faith that even though this is very harsh and very difficult, that somehow I'm on board with the idea that it will be for the best somehow. Even though we don't see it. We don't always see it. And it's for that reason that we don't make the same bracha. There's a bracha over good news. It's called Baruch Atova Ameitiv. That's a bracha. That's a good news bracha. There's a bracha Lo Aleinu for bad news. It's called Baruch Dina Emes. And that's what the Gemara says. And they're not the same bracha. So if we would ask the question, well, why aren't they the same bracha? After all, either we're subscribing to this idea that it's all for the best, so then say Atova Ameitiv over everything, if that's what you think. So why do you make a bracha but not the same bracha? But the answer very simply is because you can't. Your bracha can't be false to what you see. It could be a statement of faith. If Hashem is Dina Emes, that means he's the true judge of what is correct and fair. That could be. But I can't say Atova Meitiv if I don't see how it's working out for the best. And that's life. But that's life in Olam Hazeh. The Gemara in Maseches Pesachim and Daf Nun says a very interesting thing. Whereas nowadays, says the Gemara, you have a different bracha. You have two brachas, Hatova Meitiv and Dina Emes, but in the future there'll only be Hatova Meitiv. Now the Noda B'Yehuda, again, but this time in his Perush Tzlach and Maseches Pesachim, so he asked, what does that mean that in the future there'll only be Hatova Meitiv? If it means that in the future there'll only be, you know, good tidings or good things, so then just say there'll only be good things. Why do you focus on the bracha and not on the events? Rather, it must mean that in the future, looking back, there will be a bracha of Atova Meitiv over everything. Even things that in our current frame, we would have made Dina Emes. Because we don't know how to see it for the best. But in the future, we'll see. If you don't see, you can't make Atova Meitiv. But once you do, you can. And that's what it means that in the future, there'll be Atova Meitiv over everything. And this brings us, I think, to a very profound element within the story of Purim. The story of Purim, one can almost say, had a micro experience of looking back and seeing how everything worked out, which you don't always have. Sometimes you get out by the skin of your teeth and you don't look back. But in Purim, we did look back. And when we did, we saw how even things that seemed at the time to be terrible for us were all part of leading us to the way out. That is the concept which we refer to as v'nafochu. V'nafochu, everything was reversed, which seems to be almost like a bonus aspect. Like it makes it very interesting, as if to say, not only was Haman defeated, but everything he did towards our destruction became then turned around and channeled towards his destruction. But it's not just to make it interesting. It's almost like we're being exposed to a way of understanding how things look very different at the end, looking back, than they did at the time. When Haman sends out a decree that the Jewish people are to be exterminated, no one sees that as being a good thing. When he builds a gallows to hang Mordechai, no one sees that as being a good thing. When Esther is taken as the queen to Achashverosh, no one sees that as being a good thing. All these things, but then looking back and you see how everything fell into place and all these things were necessary ultimately for the Jewish people to emerge. We were treated not only to redemption, but almost like to a view from the future as to what the past, how these things were really working. And that is a very important gift that Purim gives to us, in the sense that it treats us almost like to what things, we're not in the future yet, we're still in the present. But it treats us almost like to an aspect of what it will be like through the Purim story to appreciate what it will be like to look back and see things so differently. Things that would have said Diana Emerson at the time to say Atova Meitivon. And obviously in much, much broader and global terms. And why does this happen? Why does Purim have this? Again, it's not just to increase our joy, to increase our Simchas Purim. But what's important to remember about Purim is that Purim isn't just facing the past, as if to say, commemorating a miracle, which is important. But it's also facing the future in the sense that the goal of Purim is to give us strength and encouragement and, from a certain point of view, vision for the future. Purim was given to us as much as we were redeemed from Haman. But we weren't that far away from heading into a very long golus. And Purim is a tool that's given to us before that golus begins, makdim refuah lamaka, in order to navigate that golus. That's why we say that the story of Purim is tikvasam b'chol dor vador. It's not just celebrating backwards. It's hope for the future. Why? Because having already seen and having experienced that as bleak as things look, everything, you reach a point where you look back and you see how everything's for the best. We don't see that yet in our golus, but we know that it's happened, and that empowers us to be able to look forward to that happening again. And that's the full gift of Purim. There is no greater gift. If the Purim is to get us through this golus, it's given to us primarily for this golus, to get us to the end. There's no greater encouragement to get the Jewish people through golus than to give them a vista as to what it will look like when it's all over, looking back. That's the greatest chizuk. And that brings, I think, Purim, it now spans all time, as if to say it begins with an event in the past, but it's with us in the future, and it enlists the way that things will look in the future, looking back. And this, of course, there's many different ways to say this, but I believe this is really what's behind the most elusive of the halachas of Purim, which is the concept of reaching a state where we cannot tell the difference between Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Aruch Haman is all the bad things that Haman tried to do, and he stays Aruch. He stays Aruch. He never graduates to Baruch. But we appreciate that as much as he's Aruch, but we got something from it. We got something from what Haman tried to do. From a certain point of view, if one may say, and once a year one may, we got as much from what Haman tried to do as from what Mordechai did for us. They have nothing in common, except the two of them were part of what enabled the Jewish people to reawaken. Haman through trying to destroy us, and Mordechai through leading us to our recovery. The full vision of Atova Ameitiv looks back at both of them until you can't even tell the difference between them in terms of appreciating what came from them. We're not there yet. We don't really have that vision yet. We try and attain that vision, ironically, by losing some of our vision currently. That's the best we can do. Unless we abdicate to a certain degree through Chai Vinish Lebesume, because we do not wish to have that mindset currently. We need to retain a demarcation of good and evil until it's all over. But just for that moment, we touch that time where you couldn't tell the difference between them. That's what's waiting for us. And when we realize that's what's waiting for us, it gives us further chizuk to make it our business to get there. So wish you all a Feilach HaPurim and Be'emes Tikvasim L'chol Dovr Dovr Shusi Yeshua's Bekarav L'Klal Berav.